This is the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Agile Uprising Podcast. Today's conversation is another in the Orsk Lab series. I'm your host, Leslie Morse, and along with Orsk Lab member Andrew Leth, we'll be chatting with our guest, Mike Colton. Mike is an enterprise Agile coach and transformation consultant. He is both Coactive trained and is a Coactive professional coach, as well as an Orsk trained practitioner and Orsk certified. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, everybody.
I'm excited because I actually get to blame all of my Orsk journey on you. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be recording this podcast series right now.
Well, Mike, if you need any backup, I can also say the same about Leslie. I blame her for all the Orsk immersion that I've been through. So it's the trifecta right now.
Yeah.
She's paid it forward.
Yeah.
I guess,
in some ways you're our patient zero.
Patient zero. Oh, there you go.
Too soon.
Yes, perhaps.
You know, it's interesting because like one of the roles that I, you know, if I think about Orsk and what I do a lot of times is I do a lot of enrolling, right? Whether it's, if I think about Agile, it's enrolling people into agility. I'm working with executives. It's enrolling them into this possibility of what Agile will bring to their organization. And so one of the things that Orsk brought me is it gave me language around roles. Like, you know, we've got, you know, a lot of times we will say that we have outer roles. Like my outer roles, I'm an Agile coach, or I'm an executive coach, or I'm a, you know, transformation coach. So that might be like a role that I have I would put on a business card. And there's inner roles. And so one of the inner roles I play is I enroll people. And so one of the things I often do is, hey, let's try this Orsk thing. Let's try it out. And so I often have enrolling conversations and get people tied up into it. And so that was one of the cool things about Orsk is it began to help me have a language, or often, you know, in Agile, we talk about what's the framework. And so it gave me a framework and a language to be able to talk about some of the stuff that I often do, and helped me gave me a perspective to see how I interact with people and how people are interacting with me, whether they're conscious or subconscious to it.
What was it that attracted you to Orsk in the first place?
Before you answer that, the follow-up question with that is, what attracted you, and did it change your coaching approach? Did it change the way that you approached coaching?
Yeah. So, I think what really attracted me, or I was curious. So I'm endlessly curious about different things. And when Lisa, or this is a story I have, may or may not be true, but when Lisa went and Michael went to create the Agile Coaching Institute, one of the people they partnered with was Marita and Faith, who are the founders of CR Global, who, you know, they also created Orsk. And so I was kind of curious, like, you know, I often I'll go to a class and I'm like, well, I actually want to know what's the root source from what you're talking about. And a lot of what ACI was built off of was really the principles and concepts that you get in Orsk training and Orsk certification, and a lot of what Marita and Faith have brought forth into professional coaching. Lisa and Michael just really put an Agile take on it. So I was like, well, I want to actually get to the doctrine, like the gospel of what this came from. And so that's what started. And then I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the people. And what changed for me in my coaching is, you know, I had been doing Coactive coaching or using that model for coaching for quite some time. But it was a lot of like dancing in the moment for me. It wasn't like there's structure around Coactive coaching, but I didn't really have a lot of language for what I was doing. I mean, they definitely have coaching skills, so I don't want to take anything away from Coactive coaching because I love it and actively use that model in my coaching today. But I really got kind of the depth of and language around what am I doing with coaching, and it gave me a way to talk about what I was doing. In so much, even like with my wife hates coaching. She uses sticky notes with me at home when we're doing like Thanksgiving dinner. But for the most part, you know, I'll have a new idea but she hates it. She's like, don't do that coach talk on me. Don't do anything like that. And I'm like, okay, fine. But with Orsk, I actually was able to talk about it in a way that wasn't like coachy or like, you know, sometimes in the agile space, we like to hug each other a lot. And it's like this huggy agile thing. It's like, that's not who my wife is at all. And I love my wife, but that's not her. And so like with Orsk, it was like, oh, I was able to kind of begin to actually talk about what I do in a way that I could actually talk about in a way that she could get it in a way that wasn't like, what are you doing? Stop. Just stop. So that was, you know, I guess I kind of went to a different question, but if I go back to your original question, it gave me language and a language that was so beautiful and a way to talk about what I'm doing with coaching and consumable to my clients and really honestly to my wife, which was the most important relationship I have.
That's really cool. I love that you're using it in work and like it's impacting home as well. Cause I think Andrew and I, when we both talk a lot and even Mike, you know, when I talk to you, it's like, it's changed who we are as people.
Yeah.
These journeys. And it's not just I'm acquiring these skills and I can better navigate these situations with organizations or with my clients or anything. Like it really does change the game you play of life. Is kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, I think it's about awareness, right? Like a lot of times when I'm working with leadership, it's this creating conscious leadership, right? It's this awakening that we're creating in ourselves around what's our impact, you know, how are we showing up, what's going inside on us, and that was one of the things that was the most pivotal around Orsk is it gave me a language to start understanding how am I showing up, what's my impact in the world. And gave me a language around helping me see how other people are showing up and what are they struggling with? What are their challenges and it just started putting stuff together in a way that was like, I kind of had a gut check, like that's what was going on, but I couldn't actually talk about it. It's like, it's that, but I was like, well, what's that? It's like, but it's that over there. And like, you know, as I'm pointing to my monitor right now, but so.
So can you kind of. Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, quick question on that. Like, you keep talking about language, right? And unfortunately, our listeners won't be able to see the Leslie chuckle when I say this, but when I was going through certification, it was one of the things that Faith and Marita, I used to kind of rib them on was this new language through Orsk, right? That it feels very abstract. So I'm just curious how you've been able to incorporate not only at work, but at home, that different language that could feel like very wooey and, hey, we need to hug and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it can make people a little bit uncomfortable with some of this new language. How did you transition or did you just lean into it and own it and people just, you know, gravitated towards it?
That's a great question. I think I did a bunch of different things and I don't know, some of it worked and some of it didn't. I think when I was first in training and started to do Orsk coaching, I would write down the Orsk terminology and figure out like, what's a normal word for that? And try that. And sometimes that worked and sometimes that didn't. I think sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this coach speak with my clients. Let's figure out a better way to talk about this. And so then I would co-create with my clients a different way to talk about it. My wife is the absolute, like if I can, my wife will get it and she's okay and doesn't get weirded out by like a coach term. So sometimes I would use my wife as a guinea pig to like figure out what's the new lexicon. But a lot of it, I would just normalize it. I'm like, gosh, you know, it's like if we talk about roles, right? It's like, hey, I've got a job title. I'm X. This is my job title. It's sometimes what we call like just an outer role. And we would just talk about what are some of the outer roles. And then I would talk about with my clients, like, what are some inner roles? And I would make fun of myself, which is pretty easy to do. And I'd be like, I'm a baker at home. My inner role is a baker. I bake so many cookies. I probably have another 10 pounds. I would lose 10 pounds easily within a month if I'd stop baking. But that's a role I like to do. I love to bake. I love to make treats for my kids. Another role I have is I'm kind of a clean freak. And so I love to clean at home. And out of that, like, you know, it's like, I get grumpy when the house isn't picked up. And so like, there's another role that comes out, which, you know, sometimes I don't actually let out. It's kind of a secret role I call Bear Dad. And it's the grumpy dad that comes out. And, you know, with my clients, I just go first a lot of times where I'm just, you know, I'm like, I just kind of like, here's my crazy. And I'm just as crazy as everybody else. And I go first and just normalize that for them. And they're like, you know, I have a lot of clients, I've got a Bear Dad too. I'm like, really? Tell me about your bear dad. And you know, like, and you know, and so sometimes like, well, you know, if it's, you know, I remember one client said, it's not bear dad, it's a mama bear. Oh, really? Tell me about mama bear. And so that's just some of the stuff that comes out. And so like by just, you know, having some fun with it and making fun of yourself, I think goes a long way to helping that what I would call language come forward. And it really is a language, because it's just like, you know, I lived in Brazil for a long time and I learned Portuguese. And so I can speak Portuguese and I can have that language in that, you know, when I, oh my gosh, Brazilians are amazing. That's another podcast. But you know, it's like, you can actually talk to them. People that play the piano, my wife is an amazing pianist. Like, she can play the piano and she has that language. So when she's talking to the pianist, or she can just look at music and she's able to interpret and do that. So it's, you know, it's a language.
And Mike, what I love about that story around kind of exploring roles is like you're operating from a secondary kind of like over the edge, where they can see that like, oh, it's safe to be over there and maybe I'll dip my toes and I can go play with you and explore it myself, with and making it so approachable and easy, which I think is just one of the natural qualities you bring to the way you coach in the times that I've experienced myself and witnessed you kind of leading with others. So what did you do to kind of, is it a natural gift set or a skill set for you? Or is it something that's you kind of like deliberately have cultivated over the years?
Yeah, because really, let me just add on to this just real quick, is your ability, you just did it through your story, to normalize was really poetic in the way you did it. You normalized it, a very uncomfortable thing for me, which is the Orsk language. You normalized it for me. You made me comfortable with it just through your story. So that is quite a gift in the sense of that meta skill of just normalizing those things. It's pretty impressive that it just came out naturally. And if it was orchestrated, even better, like kudos. So I just wanted to throw that in there too.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. I don't know if it's really natural or not. I struggled a lot and I still struggle. I'm 41 now. And I struggle. And I think that, I used to, like, when I was a teenager, I used to have a lot of shame about that and guilt. Like, I'm not normal. My parents are divorced. I have all these issues. Can't talk about it, 'cause then you're not going to fit in with everybody else. But the thing I've realized is everybody's crazy. And that's just my stance. So people that aren't crazy, I'm sorry, but I still think you're crazy. You're crazy that you're not crazy. And I think the thing is, it's like, as I get older, and even when I hit 40, man, when I hit 40, it was such an apex thing. 'Cause I'm like, okay, I'm like at this halfway point in my life where I'm like, I got 40 more years in front of me, most likely. And I got 40 years behind me. And so I just could see like this, like I'm kind of standing on top of a mountain, seeing, you know, backwards and forwards. And I saw all the struggle that I had, and I had to be with that. I had to be, and like, you know what? All that struggle made me who I am. It absolutely, every step I've taken along my journey has helped me be and stand at this place of, you know, my apex of where I was at when I was 40. And understanding that was my journey, and I had to take that journey to be the person I am. And I still have a long journey. It's still going to be an uphill journey for me. And bringing that into the world, that saying, hey, you know what? We're all on a journey. I'm on a journey, you know, and we're not perfect. And it's okay to like fail every single day. And if you fail, let's fail together. Let's make fun of it, man. Wow. I biffed that one, and, you know, and just stand together. And I think to me, that's the important thing about being in this world, is that we're in this world together and we're going to fail a whole bunch. But if we can at least stand next to each other and fall and just laugh about it, gosh, it makes the world so much better to be. And we don't have to feel guilty or shame that we make these mistakes. And I think that's the thing, like when I was younger, I didn't know. And so like when I bring into coaching, it's like, can we just normalize that we're all a little crazy? We're working through it. The world is tough. It's a tough world to be in. And that's okay. And what do we want to create from this space of, gosh, sometimes the world sucks a little bit. And it's also beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, I really love where you're pointing here, Mike, because I think that's definitely a skill that I've cultivated so much over the past, what I guess is, you know, going on 2.5 years now, is like being able to be more comfortable standing in the place of uncertainty and being able to create from there and actually letting go of that, but I've got to fix it and make it right. Like, it's okay to be here, and normalizing that. And it's the awareness of things like inner and outer roles and which of those kind of voices is speaking to me, and like, what are meta skills that are useful? Being aware of edges and change theory and all of those kind of things in a much more intimate way, that I got access to that through ORSC. So like, what are some of those sort of, I guess, maybe tools or competencies that have most shaped you in the way that you're coaching now and just showing up at home and in the world?
I think normalizing the heck out of everything. Especially, what's going on in the world right now, it's just normalizing. I was with a client that I really love working with, and his kids are home right now, and it's hard. The kids are used to routine, and like just normal. Yeah, it's rough. I mean, I got a cat that walks across my keyboard now that I'm not used to, because I used to be in the office. I've got my kids that want to come in, like, hey, Dad, you want to play a game? I'm like, oh, I can't. I got to work. Well, you always are working. Why don't you play a game? You should stop working. And I'm like, I'd love to stop working. I'm just not quite there yet there financially. And so, it's just some of it, like, to me, is just normalizing the journey that we're all on. I think the other thing is to name it. And that, I think, to me, also goes into normalizing. But it's just name it when it's uncomfortable. Man, this feels crappy. Or, wow, that sucked. Or, oh my gosh, that was so amazing. Like, I've got goosebumps, right? Like, just naming it and getting it out there sometimes just is like such an aha moment. I've got this, I don't think this is too private to share, but I've got this colleague who I just adore. And there's just a lot going on in the world right now. And his wife is in working in a hospital, and there's just a lot going on in the hospital, and he stopped shaving. And like we got on a call and was like, what's going on with the scruff here? And just like reflecting back to him on like, this not shaving thing is not like, you're kind of showing up like this laissez-faire, like whatever. And is that serving you? And just kind of like helping them see that. And they're like, wow, no. And so the funny thing is, as soon as he got off the phone, he went and shaved. And then the next day I was like, well, hopefully we didn't guilt you into shaving, did we? And like, no. Like, that's not what I was trying to pull off. And so he just saw something about himself that he didn't. And you know, that not shaving was just an expression expression of that. And so I don't remember exactly where I was going with all of that, but I think naming what's there, for yourself at least, and not necessarily naming it for others, but just naming what's present for you, I think is often helpful, because usually if you're sensing it, other people are also going to be sensing that as well.
Yeah. The way you describe naming it, like I really sensed you're talking about like reading and working with the emotional field.
Oh, yeah.
Or the examples you were giving. And I think that's an explicit ORSC competency that I think is so powerful, because like, whether you're in sort of a conversation, it's like all of a sudden, like the air gets really thick, or like everybody's kind of like giddy, or something's going on, you're like naming that, be like, and just getting curious, like what's happening here or what's going on for everybody. Like, it's those indicators that there's something in the system trying to emerge, and that's the fodder from which we co-create together.
Oh yeah. And I mean, like, naming the emotional field, it's such an edge for me. Like, I sense it and I'm like, can I say that? Like, is that okay to say that? Like, I feel that, but, and so it's a muscle that I've had to really stretch. And I'm always like, often when I'm coaching, I have a sticky note. If I'm, a sticky note on my monitor saying, name the emotional field, because it's something I always have to like, measure, or if I'm leading a class, right, or leading a training, doing some front of the room work, also on my timeline, name the emotional field. And it's powerful and it's freeing when we do as Agilists, when we kind of name that emotional field. It is so freeing for the people that we're working with, because they feel it and they don't necessarily have that muscle to be able to do that themselves.
Yeah. Any stories of doing that kind of in client situations that any of us can share? Because I think stories are the best way to kind of create that insight.
Let me think of a story that I can share.
I did some emotional field work recently, more so when I was leading something within just like a team I'm a part of. And it was like all of a sudden everybody was just laughing. But like, no, I had zero idea of like what caused it, because it's a team I'm brand new to. And so it was just kind of like, everybody's laughing. What's going on? You know, was simply just like enough to get the conversation started. And it turned out what they were really, it's like the topic at hand was something they had gone over again and again and again, and they never failed to make any progress with it. And for whatever reason, like it was sticking this time. And so it was like, they were almost laughing at themselves for like, how have we not been able to see our way out of this own paper bag, like our own paper bag. And so it's just like, it was like they were realizing it, but not ever like acknowledging that was what was going on. So it was a really great way to just like uncover something to acknowledge about the progress they were making. That it worked really well for me in that instance. I don't know, Andrew, have you had anything? Some of the work you've done?
The situation that pops out of me is usually either in a team environment or even between like two people. Hey, have a second, can you talk? That instantly, whether it reveals itself as a trigger, but it completely shifts the emotional field, right? Like I know it's a trigger for me if my boss or manager comes up to me and says, hey, you have a minute, can we talk? Or, hey, I got to talk to you, can we schedule some time? I'm automatically thinking, okay, they're filling out a pink slip, I'm going to get a box and I'm cleaning out my desk. That usually isn't the case though, but it just completely shifts the emotional field. And going into the conversation, when it's revealed what the topic is, that can also shift the emotional field, right? Like, hey, I just wanted to catch up. Oh, okay. Now I'm relaxed and I'm you know, open and I'm talking. Or, hey, we got to talk about some things that are going on at work. Ooh, you know, snap. That just shifted me into a different space in the negative. So those are the stories that pop into my head when I think about that reverb of the emotional field just kind of like rippling.
Yeah, that's the version of when one of my parents texts me and says, can you call me when you get a minute?
Yeah,
okay, exactly. Assume someone's died, something bad's happened, somebody's sick. Like, it's just like, and they do it all the time. And I'm like, you can't do that, because I'll get the text in the middle of a meeting. And then I start sweating and I'm nervous. And it's like, don't do that. Talk about emotional field shift. Mike, you had a story too. What was it?
Yeah, well, the last one you reminded me, like, I think that's how my kids react with me sometimes, where it's like, hey, got 5 minutes? And my kids automatically think there's a chore I want them to do. So the emotion feels like, no, I'm busy, Dad. I'm like, no, I wanted to just, you know, show you something or something like that. So I think often we as people will bring in certain emotional fields, or people are used to certain emotional fields. Like often what we might joke or say that leaders bring the weather, right? And they bring an emotional field. And so sometimes I think when I work with executives, a lot of times it's helping them see, what's the emotional field that you bring in to your meetings? What's the impact that you're having? And sometimes the easiest thing to do, I think, even like myself, is like, you know, it's like, it's just acknowledging like, oh, I'm not asking you to do a chore, right? At home or as an executive, even when I was a leader, I mean, when I was running an organization, I would bring in emotional fields like, oh my gosh, he's got another crazy idea for us to do. And like, just normalizing, okay, I don't have a crazy idea. I just wanted to see how you guys are doing and what can I do to help. And so just, you know, getting conscious to what's the emotional field that we often bring into the groups and teams that we're leading or we're working with, And helping normalize that, you know, especially as we're, you know, a lot of times as we're transitioning as leaders, we, you know, I remember, you know, the leader I was, you know, a decade ago to how I lead now, it's like, you know, especially when we're working as agilists, working, helping our leaders and our middle-level management just make that shift and that transition, helping them see what's their impact and helping them understand.
Yeah.
And I've got, you know, I think recently with a client that I can share about, I have a similar story about productivity, right? We were doing a Kaizen, working on doing some process improvement. And the first thing they were working on took a couple hours. It was a little bit of a slog fest trying to get through it. The next one they did, they kind of got the rhythm of how to do it. And it took them half the time. I was like, hey, did you guys feel that? It took you guys like half the time to do that. Oh my gosh. The next time they did it, like they took them half the time again to do the next chunk. I'm like, hey, it took us half the time. Felt great. And then they like, you know, they, you know, ended the day early. And, you know, our clients, once we start recognizing the emotional field for them, they get into it and they want to recognize the emotional field, because especially when there's good vibes, who doesn't want to recognize that? Wow, this feels good. It's like when my baseball team wins. It's rare, but it makes me feel good.
Well, and I think you referred to it there kind of as a muscle, and it is a muscle you can strengthen. You mentioned that earlier. And I think it's just making people aware it's a muscle they have to use. And I think an interesting thing in the stories all of us shared is like there was a component of language to it, which is almost sort of where we started, which was what's the language you use, and building the awareness that the language you choose can create emotional fields. And you can be intentional about, oh, I'm getting ready to walk into this meeting, or I'm getting ready to have a conversation with this person. Like, what's the spell I want to cast in it? Like, yeah, we might need to have a hard conversation, but how can I choose to make the sort of plant the seed that we need to talk in a way that's not creating the fear and the anxiety with each other? And so it's like that kind of inner sense making and preparation before you take action or before you speak. And I'm starting to ramble, but I think you see where I might be going.
And you know, what I point out and build onto that is a lot of what you're speaking to is also getting it out in front, right? That's another or skill is like, you know, we're getting out in front, we're standing together, looking at the same thing. A lot of times, you know, often when we've got something it's difficult to talk about or just anything in general, it's in between you and the other person or you and the party. So it's like this thing in between us. So let's get out. So we're standing together, looking at it in the same direction. And so we get out in front and just helping it put it out there. It's no longer in the middle of us. We can actually work with it and create when we're standing together, looking at it from the same perspective, sometimes a lot more effectively or a lot easier than when it's in the middle of us.
Yeah, absolutely. What other things, Mike, about ORSC might you want to share with folks? Maybe any pivotal moments on your journey or other tips or tricks for people?
Well, I love the ORSC system, and the frontline leaders are amazing. So it's just a really welcoming community. I think the biggest thing for me was it gave me language around what's happening inside me in a way that it helped me learn on how to be with myself more. Which I think, if I think about any transformation, the first transformation is always myself. Like if I can cross that edge, if I can make that shift and that change, then I can work with my clients, whether that's in professional coaching, agile transformations, at any level, the first thing I've got to do is help myself cross over that edge. And so it helped me give me a framework to understand what was going on inside me in a way that allowed me to then, you know, consciously, not just subconsciously anymore, but consciously make some shifts and changes in my life that then also allowed me to, you know, kind of lead and guide my clients, whether that's in professional coaching or agility. It helped me then, like, you know, really meet myself where I'm at, reveal what was going on in my own internal systems, and then kind of create an alignment and act upon that. And so really just using those principles of systems entry with myself and with my clients, I think that's what ORSC really did for me in a way that other coaching programs haven't. They were amazing and I got a ton out of it. But when ORSC entered my life, it really just began to solidify things in a way that allowed me to catalyze and really create some pretty significant fundamental systemic shifts.
That's great. Wow. Andrew, anything else you're curious about?
Yeah, there's lots I'm curious about, but I don't want to burn our listeners out with a bunch of craziness sometimes. But so how do I guess for me, I love what you said, Mike, about the, you know, transformation starting with yourself. How has it changed your facilitation? So as a facilitator as well, and having attended some of your workshops and facilitation styles, has it changed? Hasn't it changed? Has it revealed something to you? Has ORSC helped you in your facilitation because you're actually pulsing the room a lot differently? So just curious about your facilitation style. Has it, you know, was it impacted by ORSC?
Yeah, I think when I really first started doing a lot of Agile stuff, I was really heavy into Agile games and a lot of like facilitation techniques. And I still use lots of facilitation techniques. With ORSC in particular, I kind of let a lot of that go. I still play games. I still, you know, facilitate meetings. But I'm really focused on what's here for the client and how do we create from what's here. So working with what's emerging, helping them get present to what's emerging. So I would say that I feel like my facilitation is less gamey and way more deep. And that's like a double positive, so it's probably not proper English, but it's just, I really want to get like what's here for people. And so I think the impact that the people that I have the privilege of working with and leading workshops with, they just get way more connected than I could by playing a dozen games throughout my, you know, courses. And the games are great. Like, people that are Agile games enthusiasts, please don't take this that I don't love Agile games. I absolutely do. But to me, what's most important about people is the connections they make in a workshop, the connections they make to the content, the connections they make to themselves, and the connections they make to others. And that's really what I want to do is, how do I help cast that spell that allows that safety and vulnerability for people to really kind of step out of that shell that a lot of times we walk around in, to really come out and be vulnerable and really genuinely learn something that allows them to shift. So when they go back to their work or to their client, the next day, the next time, that they actually have fundamentally changed something, that they can bring more value to that organization. I think that's the biggest thing that shifts is I've kind of let go of a lot of all that stuff I started with. And now it's really about like, what's here now? And what do we want to create together in the context of this, you know, class or workshop?
Yeah. I love that. And that's that. I mean, there's a whole episode just in, like, there's a million threads I want to pull on that one. So Mike might have to bring you back in for another conversation about that, because I'm thinking about stuff that all three of us learned in the alchemy course, mm-hmm. and stuff we've done around the art of co-leading, yeah. and other things that are kind of all tangentially related to ORSC coaching competencies and skills, but not necessarily solely in that ORSC wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I am curious though, Mike, as we wrap up, anybody that might be thinking about starting their ORSC journey, advice for them?
Do relationship coaching. It is the hardest thing that you'll ever do when you coach, but coach couples. It's an amazing experience. You're going to grow a ton coaching couples, but it's also terrifying. So that's the recommendation I would have, is just dive right in, but work with couples. And I'm not just like, you know, business couples are great, so I don't want to take anything away from that. But couples that have a significant other, whether, you know, some kind of romantic engagement, you're going to learn a ton and grow a ton about, learn about a lot about yourself. You're going to learn a lot about coaching when you're coaching couples. So that would be my one piece of advice, is jump in that space and just be ready to learn a ton by doing that.
That's great. So Mike, I know you wanted to make sure today we kind of really explored how you've been using ORSC to kind of better work with people and cultivate more awareness of how to work with people. Would you say we accomplished that today?
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to give a summary, it's like the first system is always ourselves to work with. So start there, and then start working with people that you love and trust, and then branch out. But Absolutely. And I appreciate you guys having me on. It's fun. I adore both of you too. All the best.
Yeah. Thank you. Final thoughts, yeah. Andrew?
No, I love this conversation. I'm enjoying being a participant in the ORSC Lab series. So I hope we get some feedback. So I think we're really looking to solicit for some feedback, and want to thank Mike for being on, and of course Leslie for being the hostess with the mostest.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it. It's been fun. And thanks for listening. Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of ORSC Lab as part of Agile Uprising. We hope you've enjoyed the episode and invite you to follow the hashtag ORSC on Twitter to be part of the conversation and provide that feedback Andrew was asking for. You can also subscribe to Agile Uprising podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider to get notifications of new episodes as soon as they're available.